All right, Mike, thank you. KY6V, we're ready.
Good evening and welcome to the Outreach Program, sponsored by the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This program has been established to help those wishing to learn more about our hobby and further assist those wishing to obtain license status. This is the first in a series that will be an in-depth course pertaining to what one should know when studying for the technician class. This is actually the last class of the technician class license. This course will be conducted, was conducted, with two sessions weekly. We had them on Sundays and Tuesday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 Zulu each evening. Now, if you just want to listen or would you like to have a refresher course, you missed most of it, but that's quite all right. If you just like to listen, you can please contact us at SCARS, S-C-A-R-S, server, on either Echolink node number 96140 or IRLP node 9614, letting it drop. Now, just because this is the last class don't mean it's all over. We are on the Internet, and I'm going to give you the Internet address where you can listen to the recordings of these classes, where you can receive information about the questions and the answers, with also helpful material to help your learning. And we'll still take your questions on email if you want to send them to us individually. So right now I'm going to give you that email address in this next test. Stand by. The material being presented is formatted from data obtained from the ARRL and is simply being forwarded in a presentation format by SCARS. Should anyone take issue with some of the technical statements made, and in keeping with not interrupting the class and session, please convey your comments and suggestions to our outreach program. Now here's the email address, VOIP at voipnet.southcars.com. Before we start this evening's program, it should be mentioned that the material being covered is based on the new Q&A that became effective July 1st, 2014. It should be further mentioned that this course covers only the requirements pertaining to the United States Part 97 rules and does not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing session on this server, please drop us an email. Same address, VOIP at voipnet.southcars.com. Do we have any emergency or out of the ordinary business that needs to be handled before we start this evening's program? Well, unless there was emergency problems and they were whispering, I didn't hear anything. My name is Mike, Mike India Kilo Echo. My call sign is Kilo Delta Zero, Charlie Delta Quebec. I'm your opening moderator for this evening. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to KY6 Victor Gordon in hopefully sunny Florida. So, Gordon, take it away for your comments. Over.
Hey, thanks very much, Mike. And it has been a beautiful day. Blessed in sunshine from the start to the finish. Good evening, everybody. Gordon here, KY6V from Southeast Florida. And tonight is the last of the last, guys and gals. We thank you that stayed with the program over the last 4 weeks, and we sincerely hope you enjoyed your time and learned at the same time. There is but one thing that you are now need to do in order to pass your technician license. And Lyman and I were talking about this just before Net started. Take the practice tests. Take them religiously and daily until you are passing these tests with better than an 80% grade. Once their lineup, once that's done, lineup of VEC examination station, if you will, and go do your stuff. So Kathy, K6N, SUN, and I will be winding up the course for this evening. Kathy will be starting with the first three questions, with yours truly following with the next three, and we will continue in this fashion until the evening session is complete. This is KY6V for South Cars Outreach Technician Class, Please allow me to reset the necessary timers, and we will begin. Okay, Miss Sunshine, it's all yours, and thanks for running with me again tonight. KY6V to K6SUN. Okay, looks like Kathy's having a little bit of audio difficulty. I heard her test on the test server here a few minutes ago. It sounded pretty good to me, but right at the moment she doesn't have it. Do you you think you have it? She says she hears me. That doesn't mean that we're going to hear her. Kathy, give me a transmission, please. Over.
This is Kathy, Kilo 6 Sierra United November. How do you hear me?
By golly, I think you've got it, Kathy. Go ahead, KY6V. Well, I don't know what your problem may be. Drop the laptop on the floor and pick it back up. We'll see what happens. All right, guys and gals, I'll go ahead with the first thing. Kathy, what we might do is we'll just flip-flop positions here. I'll take the first three. You work as Gordon, and I'll work as Kathy. We're going to start with section T9 alpha, guys and gals. That's antennas, vertical and horizontal polarization, concepts of gain, common portable and mobile antennas, relationship between antenna length and frequency. The first question this evening is T9 alpha 01. T9A01, and the question is simply, what is a beam antenna? The correct answer out of your four multiple choices is C as in Charlie, an antenna that concentrates signals in one direction. Just don't worry about the other distractors in that group. A directional antenna or beam antenna is an antenna which radiates greater power in one or more directions, allowing for increased performance on transmit and receive, and reduced interference from unwanted sources. They're called beams. They're called Yagis. Beam antennas can also be cubical quads. So there's a number of names, but they're all basically the same thing. They are directional in their operation. Any questions on this, please? KY6V for South Cars. Okay, let's move it on to the second question. T9 Alpha 02, T9 A02, which reads, which of the following is true regarding vertical antennas? The proper answer here of the four multiple choices are B as in Bravo, the electric field is perpendicular to the earth. Now remember that. The electric field is perpendicular to the earth in a vertical antenna. Now, I'll give you a little background on this. A moving charge always has both a magnetic and an electrical field. And that's precisely the reason why they are associated with each other. They are two different fields with nearly the same characteristics. Therefore, they are interrelated in a field called electromagnetic field. In this field, the electric field and the magnetic field move at right angles to each other. Remember that. 90 degrees from each other, right angles. However, they are not dependent on each other. They may also exist independently. Without the electric field, the magnetic field exists in a permanent magnet, as an example, and an electrical field exists in the form of static electricity in absence of the magnetic field. So, make it easy on yourself. Just remember that the electrical field in this question is perpendicular to Earth. Any questions, please? Over.
KF5VH comment.
All right, I had a distractor in there. I was asking Kathy how she was doing. She's still having problems. Who came on frequency, please?
Victor Hotel.
Oh, Victor Hotel. Hello, Steve. Go ahead, sir.
I just wanted to provide a memory aid. We're talking about the E field and the M field. The E, or electric field, is always in the same direction as the element. So if an antenna has an element which starts with an E, its electric field is in that same plane. So vertical antenna has vertical elements, and the E field is always vertical. Horizontal, the elements are horizontal, and the E field, same as the elements, horizontal. That's it, KF5VH.
Yeah, good point. Thanks, Steve. Any other comments on this? Okay, I'm going to keep rolling here until we see what is going to happen with Kathy. Texas 9 Alpha 03, T9AO3. The question reads, which of the following describes a simple dipole mounted so that the conductor is parallel to the Earth's surface? Let me read that one again. Which of the following describes a simple dipole mounted to so the conductor is parallel to the Earth's surface? And in your four possible multiple choice questions, B, Bravo, is the correct one, and it reads a horizontally polarized antenna. Okay, I'd like to say this is a very popular antenna, particularly for lower frequency bands, where it's not practical to build a rotating beam antenna. Your antennas get a little long when you get down around 40 meters. Half wave's about 60 feet. By the time you get down to 75 meters, your half wave is about 120 feet. If you think of trying to build a beam, and some people have done it, with that length involved, it gets sort of hairy. Any questions on this, please? KY6V. All right. Kathy's saying that let her give it a try and see if she's got this thing solved or she still has a problem. Kathy, we're coming into my section, which is T9 Bravo. This is on page 7. We have the header for T9 Bravo, and then we have the question T9 Bravo 01 following that. Is that okay? All right, let's give her a try here, guys. KY6V to K6SUN.
All right, this is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I'm going to keep going as long as this machine will keep me going, but it seems some of my connections don't like me tonight. But let me start with Tango 9 Bravo. We're going to talk about feed lines, a type of feed lines, attenuation versus frequency, SWR concepts, matching weather protection, choosing RF connectors and feed lines. My question is T9 Bravo 01, which reads, why is it important to have a low SWR in an antenna system that uses coaxial cable feed line? And let me read that once again. Why is it important to have a low SWR in an antenna system that uses coaxial cable feed line? Your right answer is actually Bravo, to allow the efficient transfer of power and reduce losses. Some of the distractors include to reduce television interference. That's wrong. To prolong antenna life. And that's wrong. And the final one is that favorite of mine. All of these choices are correct. So your correct answer is Bravo, to allow the efficient transfer of power and reduce losses. The higher the SWR, the less power will be transmitted from your antenna. Conversely, the weaker the incoming receive a signal will be at your receiver. Let me throw it out there and see if we have any comments or any questions, and I'll hopefully continue on. All right, let me continue on. My system seems to be working okay. So my next question is a Tango 9 Bravo 02. And it reads, what is the impedance of the most commonly used coaxial cable in typical amateur radio installations? And once again, I'll read that again. What is the impedance of the most commonly used coaxial cable in typical amateur radio installations? Your correct answer is actually a Bravo, once again, 50 ohms. The other choices are 80 ohms and 600 ohms and 12 ohms, but the correct answer is actually 50 homes. And I'm going to give you a short explanation, then we'll once again ask for questions. Just remember that most manufacturers of ham radio equipment design their equipment to work into a 50-ohm load. Any questions, any comments?
I have one. The last question before you said that, you had a question about why is it important to have a low SWR in an antenna system that uses coaxial cable feed line? What is the first question, or maybe this is the only, what is an SWR in an antenna? I don't know what that is. Can you answer that for me, or no? I think you can.
Yeah, hi, Lyman. I'll pick this one up, if I may. Gordon here, KY6V. SWR stands for Standing Wave Ratio. Okay, Standing Wave Ratio. And incidentally, we recently put a glossary up on the website, included in the tutorial information for the technician class, on what some of these common words that we bant about mean, and SWR, I know for a fact, happens to be in there. It is the standing wave ratio, basically speaking, of an impedance mismatch if the SWR is high, meaning that the transmission line is not matching the center feed impedance of the antenna. What happens here, Lyman, is power is reflected back from the antenna because of this mismatch, and comes back down the coax towards your transmitter. This is lost energy. Does that make sense to you, sir? Over.
That makes a total big sense. So now I can answer the question by myself, because you guys have been saying the questions, and I've been answering myself. So now I can answer it myself now. So thank you.
That's great. I can see you're going to ace this test, Lyman. We're very, very proud of you. Okay, Kathy, back to you, please. KY6V.
All right, Lyman. Thanks so much. Did you have another question? Was that the only one? I know you said first, so I'll ask you on the previous question. And, you know, as a teacher, when it comes to first, I figure you have another one. Lyman, do you have another question? Maybe on the last one I went over? Or if so, why don't you just come aboard and ask us?
No, I didn't have another question while I was answering. Well, no, sorry. While I was asking that question, I answered the other one for myself.
All right, Super Lyman. Like Gordon has said, and everyone else has said, it's been a pleasure to have you on as a student. And we know that it's not going to take you much time before you head in and take that test, and you're actually going to ace it, it sounds like. All right, let me continue into the next question. It's Tango 9 Bravo 03. Mine reads, and it's another question with that coaxial cable. Why is coaxial cable used more often than any other feed line for amateur radio antenna systems? And let me reread it. Why is coaxial cable used more often than any other feed line for amateur radio antenna systems? Your correct answer in this case is alpha. It is easy to use and requires few special installation considerations. Some of the other choices are it has less loss than other type of feed lines. It can handle more power than any other type of feed line. It is less expensive. You know, this statement is true with alpha, but one must remember that the higher you go in frequency, the more loss is exhibited by the coax. It then becomes necessary for one to pick the correct type of coax for the application at hand. So with that, I'm going to throw it out there for any comments, any questions. Maybe some of our instructors or you, Gord, may want to add anything more to it. But let's see what else we can get, or who else we can get to come aboard. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, along with KY6V and the Technician Final Course. Are there any comments or any questions?
For UJL.
Go ahead, Mr. Jim.
Good evening, and I just want to say thank you for what y'all did. I'm guest with Lyman tonight for the last class. I almost forgot to be here, and I have really enjoyed this. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Mr. Jim, for being here. And hopefully we'll see you on maybe some of our nets just to say hi, but We look forward to the different sessions, and it'll be a year before we get together again. But like Gordon has said, all the course material is there in case Lyman chooses, after he passes that technician, to get into the general and the extra. All that course material is actually there for him to study. So with that, Gordon, I'm going to throw it over to you. You know, I'm not sure what was wrong with my microphone, but usually the place I plug it in wasn't working. Must be that heat we're having. 90 degrees currently, everyone, and it's going to be hotter tomorrow. So hopefully it's going to work the rest of the evening. So with that, Gordon, I'm going to let you take on the next three.
Okay, and the next three come under the classification of Kathy, so I'll just change my hat. You're sounding great, Kathy. No problem at all at this point, so just keep it up. All right, we're moving into supplement T0, guys and gals. Electrical safety, AC and DC power circuits, antenna installation, RF hazards. Now, there will be three exam questions on your exam out of this TO section. And there are three groups in the TO. Okay, TOA covers power circuits and hazards, hazardous voltages, fuses and circuit breakers, grounding, lightning protection, battery safety, and electrical code compliance. All very, very important stuff. So the question we're moving into, let me buy a nickel, is TOA01, which reads, which of the following is a safety hazard of a 12-volt storage battery? Now, this is the same dude that we all have in the cars, remember? 12-volt storage battery. The question again, which of the following is a safety hazard of a 12-volt storage battery? And the correct answer out of the multiple choice is B as in Bravo. Shorting the terminals can cause burns, fire, or an explosion. They can be nasty, guys. So without looking over the other disclaimers, and I think they speak for themselves, this is one reason for fuses in an automobile, everybody. Car batteries can produce several hundred amps of starting power. Shorting these terminals, which is akin to shorting the terminals of a 120-volt socket in your house, if there were no breakers to save the day, the problem could become drastic. So use fuses. Don't deliberately short the terminals. I've got a couple of screwdrivers around here through the years where the tips have been blown right off. And that wasn't from a battery, that was from a houseplate. KY6V, any questions out there? Okay, I guess that one spoke for itself. We're now moving on to T0A02, and that question reads, how does current flowing through the body cause a health hazard? Of your multiple choice answers, D as in Delta. And here's one of these guys again, says all of these choices are correct. So let's go back and look at the other choices. A said by heating tissue. That is correct. It disturbs the electrical function of cells in your body. That is correct. It causes involuntary muscle contractions. And that is correct. So, let's talk a little bit on taking the test here. You know, you have a 50-50 chance of being correct if you choose all of these choices are correct. On the other hand, if you are confident that two of the other answers are correct, then all of these choices are correct would be your best choice. If that makes sense, let me know. And any questions out there on this one, please? Okay. All is correct and all is understood. The last question in my group here is TOB01, TOBravo01. It reads, what should members of a tower work team where, now let me reread that. When should members of a tower work team wear a hard hat and safety glasses? Now just think about this. This one's common sense. The proper answer out of your multiple choices is C, as in Charlie, at all times when any work is being done on the tower. And I'm going to put in a little comment here. You know, tower crews, and I've worked with tower crews most of my working life, being in the television business for about 50 years. And we had some tall towers, 2,000 footers and what have you. The tower crews in the industry have a word they use when something is falling from the tower. They scream out the word headache. Headache. Now, this is something like the game of golf when the word four is used. You get the idea? You're going to get hit, so have a hard hat on. Any questions, please? Didn't quite get that, Mike, but I saw your key up. But go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I had the window too small. Yeah, and you don't have to be directly below the people that are working on that tower to be clunked on the head, because wrenches have a way of getting wings and flying a little way away from the pole. So when you're working on the ground, don't say, well, I'm not right under the tower. Anytime people are working above you, whether it be on a tower or up on a ladder, should have something on your head. Because especially with the tower, that thing can catch you when you're not even under that tower. So just be safe with the crew. Keep that helmet on. That's all I got to add. Over.
Yes, sir. And I have seen some nasty things come off of towers with wings on them. You're absolutely correct. All right. Thanks, Mike. I'm going to turn it over to Kathy. Let me see, Kathy. I think this is the final, and it's a wrap on yours. So I'm hearing something out on the back porch. I want to go check. So you go ahead and take these, and when you're done, turn it over to Mike, and we'll see how the thing rolls out from there. KY6V to K6SUN.
All right, this is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. Looks like my system is still working. Now the other night, remember, guys and gals, I told you about two special clues I use on tests. One is the all is correct. Like Gordon says, it's 50 and 50. But I also told you, you have no other chance and choice. If you don't know some of the answers and you can't figure it out, I always went with that longest answer, longest worded answer. And as you look at that one that Gordon just went over, he did the correct answer was the longest. Now, he's out on the porch, and he's not going to hear what I'm going to tell everyone. But this is not actually on an antenna tower, but I've been working in my classroom to prepare for the new school year. I've been doing bulletin boards, and I'm only 5'4", and these bulletin boards are possibly 10 feet. And I can't reach that even on a small ladder or stool. So I actually get on top of the tables, which is not safe. I figure they're probably sturdy enough that I get on top of those tables so I can go up and put the things at the top of the bulletin board. And probably that's not a wise choice either. Let me pause here for a moment, and I'm going to complete this evening session with three questions. All right, my first question is Tango Zero Bravo Zero 3. Under what circumstances is it safe to climb a tower without a helper or an observer? And we have a lot of choices here, but you know, the correct one, if you're looking at your answers, is actually Delta. Never. You never, never, never want to do this. Some of the other choices are when no electrical work is being performed and no mechanical work being performed, or when the work being done is not more than 20 feet above. But actually, the correct answer is never. Under no circumstances is it safe to climb a tower without a helper or observer. And I'm talking to you about in my classroom. I was all by myself, by the way. So that was not a smart choice, but I felt safe. So with that, do we have any comments, any questions? All right, hearing nothing. I still hear the chimes on the outside porch, so I know Gordon's out there doing something with some of those animals out there. So let me continue on. Tango Zero Charlie 02. It reads, which of the following frequencies has the lowest value for maximum permissible exposure limit? We have a lot of megahertz listed here. The correct choice is Bravo, 50 megahertz. So let me read that question once again. Which of the following frequencies has the lowest value for maximum permissible exposure limit? And that is 50 megahertz. You know, my suggestion is you just memorize this. There are FCC bulletins out there that will substantiate this question, but this is one of those that you may just want to memorize. So before I go through my final question this evening, are there any comments, any questions? You know, besides Lyman and Jim, it's been rather calm, quiet out there with our students, but maybe there's someone else who would like to come aboard. So I'm going to throw it out there before I do the final question to see if anyone else would like to come aboard.
VE3MEW.
Well, good evening, Bill. You've been riding along with us, not only as an instructor, but as a listener and a participant. Thanks for being here tonight, and hope all is well up there in Peterborough. It is very warm down here and will be warm in the next few days, but no rain at the moment. So what do you want to tell us tonight, Bill?
Well, first of all, it's nice to hear your voice again, Ms. Sunshine. You're sounding well. And we've just passed a new legislation up here that involves you and your climbing on the desk here. And by order of E3MEW at 589 Ashburnham Drive in Peterborough, you are not allowed to fall. No falling from the desk. Don't want to hear about it. So it will be punishable by a lot of pain if that happens. So be careful. Oh, dear me. Anyway, regarding your last question that you read out there, it's important to try and remember that the damage to the human body with exposure to radiation increases as the frequency goes up. So while you may not suffer too much damage at 40 meters or 80 meters or something like that, by the time the frequency gets up much above 50 and then towards 2 meters and on up, it begins to be a different story. There's still a lot of controversy out there about the use of cell phones and the frequency they put out being up next to your head. There's some research that actually shows that they raise the heat level in the bones of the side of the head up by the ear. So the higher the frequency, the more damage. Just want to try and remember that. Oh, and one more thing about tower climbing. I've climbed many, many a tower, and some of them were commercial up here. I worked with another chap from Newfoundland, and we prided ourselves on being very good about it. We always had one little clever saying. And that's, you have to totally concentrate because you only get to make one mistake. You only got to worry about the first 40 feet. After that, it doesn't matter. You make a mistake from 40 feet on up, and that's going to be all over. It's done. So, and of course, you better hope you don't live if you fall from less than 40, because you're probably never going to walk again. You'll probably be severely injured. So we worry about the first 40 feet, but you don't make any mistakes. You have to totally concentrate. You can't take any of your worries or any of your squabbles with your wife or your girlfriend or up there, any of your debt worries or nothing like that up the tower. You got to completely concentrate on every move you make and make sure it's the right one. Because if it's wrong, you're not going to get to do it again. Back to net, VE3MEW.
This is CDQ with a comment. I have fallen out of two oak trees, and it's pretty cool when you're coming down. But then, you know, your mind's telling you, whoa, I got to hit the ground. It's not too cool when you hit the ground. But on the way down, it's kind of interesting because you're actually thinking, oh, that's all I got to give. Go ahead, Kathy.
Well, thank you, Bill, for telling me I cannot climb on that desk and it's forbidden. And actually, every time I do that, I sort of, is this desk safe? But they carry computers usually too, so I figure they're pretty safe. When I go up and do the bulletin boards, I've actually taken ladders to school, and you know what I do? I miss that last step, and I end up on the ground. So I feel safer on the desk than climbing a ladder because I always miss that last step. But I'm still working on finishing things. The teacher I teach with saw me doing this, and he wasn't concerned at all. He said, "Are you having fun?" That's about all he said to me. So thank you both, Bill and Mike, for sharing this evening. But I'm going to work on the last question for our technician course and for this evening. But before I do, let me pause for just a moment. All right, our last question is Tango Zero, Charlie Zero 3. And it reads, what is the maximum power level that an amateur radio station may use as a VHF frequency before an RF exposure evaluation is required? Let me reread that for you. What is the maximum power level that an amateur radio station may use at VHF frequencies before an RF exposure evaluation is required? The right answer is Charlie, 50 watts PEP at the antenna. And the rest of them are different watts, and I won't go into that. But PEP is the power delivered to the antenna after one considers their transmitter power, the loss in any filters, the loss in the coax being used, and the rated gain of the antenna. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our final question for our course. But are there any comments? Are there any questions? If we don't have those, is there any advice out there from instructors? Anyone else that would like to give to our students who probably are in the process of studying and getting ready to take that exam? So anyone want to come aboard?
3-3-M-E-W.
And KC2-RMO.
Go right ahead, Bill. I think you were the first in the batter's box. Over.
Okay, Mike. Thank you. That last question that Kathy gave out was quite interesting. We don't have that question, and we don't have that regulation on our stuff up here in amateur radio in Canada. It might be a good idea if we did, but we don't. We can turn around and crank up a 1,000-watt linear to a 2-meter station, and there's no other rules applied as to RF exposure testing or any of that kind of stuff at all. So I just commenting from the fact that that is interesting, and from time to time I may bring that up against the right people when I come up against them and trying to remember to ask them, why do we not have this? Why do the Americans have it and we don't? Don't you think it might not be a good idea? Blah, blah, and so on and so forth. Over to you, Mike, for E3MEW.
Okay, I'm going to throw it over. I think it was a KC2RMO. Is that you also with a comment? Over.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, I had just one quick comment to make. This is KC2RMO. To both Steph and to Lyman, you know, I get to use one of my favorite phrases. I think this has been a lot of mumbo jumbo. To begin, when you first start learning, none of this stuff really makes sense. It's all new. I know Steph, being married to a ham for almost 10 years and hearing all these terms and seeing all the crazy stuff I do, now it's becoming a reality and something she's learning what the actual meaning of these things are. And Lyman, I think this is the same thing probably for you too, where this is the first time that you've actually tried to embrace the subject. My advice is that you've got a real good foundation here. Take those tests on QRZ. When you see a term that doesn't make sense, go as Gordon said, we've got the glossary on the website. Go look up, and if it still doesn't make sense, one of the great traditions in amateur radio is Elmering. And, you can ask any of us in South Cars a question, chances are you'll get a snappy answer, and chances are it'll be the right one, too. So, don't forget that you can use your Elmers, too. So that's all I've got to say. I'm turning it back to the net. This is KC2RMO.
Gee, Lyman, you're getting so much good information. This is KD0CDQ, and you get me thinking. Like tonight, I have 6 nets that I do on Tuesday nights. Nets. Even before you get your license, and definitely after you get your license, listen to the nets. Listen to the cadence of what they do. There's a lot of similarity. You'll be able to identify a good net operator and you'll be able to catch that word is cadence, because when people are calling in their call sign, they have to give each other a space, put it that way, to get the call sign out, and then the next person comes on, the next. So catch that cadence. It's kind of like a little dance that goes on, so that you don't feel embarrassed that you don't step on somebody else. Step on somebody else means that they're transmitting and you start transmitting on top of them, so both of you get snarled together. So I would start listening to nets, find out where the nets are, and just listen. Listen to how people communicate with each other. Hopefully you're getting on nets that have a lot of respect for each other and the people are very friendly. And that's a good way to learn, to start. So when you start getting on nets, it's going to be scary in the beginning. The first few times you give your call sign, you'll probably give somebody else's call sign. Who knows what you'll do. But enjoy, and don't be afraid of making mistakes. People who are afraid of making mistakes don't do much. You'll find the people that make a lot of mistakes do a lot of stuff. So be one of those guys. You know, you make a mistake, okay, laugh, and it's over. But don't be afraid to get on the radio when you get your license. And don't be afraid to listen to the nets and catch what they're doing and get a feel for that. Letting it drop. Anyone else have a comment regarding nets and listening to the radio? Over.
P3 Army W.
Thanks for making me interfere with this net, because I've loved it and everything. It's been an awesome experience for me. I'm gonna hope to pass this test for my grandfather for his birthday, August 22nd, because he didn't think I could do it because he used to be a ham. So I'm just gonna live it up to him.
We're gonna make sure he does.
Thank you. So back to the net.
Okay, Lyman, I think you got us all kind of with a smile on our face, but I'm gonna throw it over to Bill. Bill has the comment. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, this is V3MEW. This comment is aimed at you, Lyman. Whatever you do, try to remember that that test is not going to be near as hard as you think it's going to be. Your imagination is just zooming it way out of proportion, far beyond what it's supposed to be. And I want you to remember, Lyman, amateur radio is supposed to be fun. When the day comes and it stops being fun, that's the day I stop doing it. That's how simple a statement is. It's supposed to be a fun thing like playing baseball or basketball or whatever. So, and that test, so like I said, you got to study. You got to know some things, and that's cool. There's nothing wrong with that. But you tell yourself, hey, have I done my best? Have I studied and worked at this as best I could? If the answer is yes, then you just put a smile on your face, and you go in there and write that exam. And I'm telling you right now, buddy, it's not going to be near as hard as you think it's going to be. Trust me on that. Back to net, V3MEW.
This is KD0CDQ in Lyman. When you're an old man, you know, when you get to be about 30 years old, when you're an old man, and you think that you had your license, you were just a kid, people will respect you for that. You'll find that most hams respect those that have had a license for a long time. You know, it's just comes with the territory. So remember that. Even though you're starting now, you'll get respect from other hams, but we always respect the hams that have been around for a long time, even if they go away and come back. It doesn't matter. Okay, anyone else have any comments? We're getting ready to turn off the recordings. Yeah, old at 30. I'm saying that because thinking of Lyman's age, he sees a 30-year-old guy. That's an old man walking down the street. Okay, anybody else have any comments before we turn off this recording? Over. Yeah, so I can remember when I was in high school, I was with a bunch of guys, and we were hanging out after a ball game, and somebody said, some comment came up about a person, how old is he? They said, oh, he's 22 years old. Ugh. And I thought, you know, yeah, that guy's 22. I think I was 13 or 14. That's an old guy at 22. So everything is relative, Lyman. And the same as Bill was saying, the test seems like it's a mountain to climb. It's not bad. I believe, hopefully, you're going to be one of these guys, like many of us. You look at that test paper, and you can't move your pencil fast enough to write the right answer down. But just don't overspeed yourself like an engine overspeeds and screws up. Make sure that the answer you pick is the one that's right, and don't doubt yourself. Don't go back and change answers unless you do something kind of silly. Make sure you got the right answer. Make sure that the answer sheet, you're on the right number. You've seen that in school, I know, that when you're doing question number 9, make sure you're on paper says question number 9. Don't get yourself thrown off. Just take your time, Oh, it'll be a little sweaty. Yeah, because it's just natural. The body is just putting out those endorphins and everything to get you ready for the scary thing. But it's not scary. And everybody will be nice to you. The VEs, the tester people, will be nice to you. They'll be polite. And everything will go smoothly. And when you go out of there, you're going to say, whoa, you're going to be proud. You're not going to be able to wait to get out there and turn a radio on and give your call sign. Okay. I don't know if Gordon is back to turn off the recordings. KY6 Victor, are you back to turn off the recordings? Over.
I am, sir. Thanks, Mike. Hey, some great comments. Did you happen to notice that RMO put in the text box, don't trust anyone over 30? Boy, that really throws me in the box, doesn't it? And MEW, hello, Bill. Kathy acknowledges she'll stand by for you after the recordings. Give me 20 seconds, and I'll give you a heads up, Mike. KY6V, everybody stand by, please.